to it. One of the big problems with the myth as an author was that there was not much to go on, and so I had to expand the mythology greatly. I found myself adding not to the horses, but to the island and what they did with the horses, so I added in festivals and rituals and what these horses really meant to the islanders. The Scorpio Races, out of all of my books, is the most real of the books, which sounds incredible when you're talking about a novel that involves flesh-eating horses, but it's true. I was obsessed with the setting of Thisbe, the magical island. I really wanted it to feel like the reader was standing there at the base of the cliffs watching these races being run. I wanted them to feel like they'd gone to Thisbe and spent a couple of weeks there, and when they left, they were still trying to get the salt out of their hair. So I spent the year before I wrote this novel visiting cliffs all over the world. When I was in California on tour, I walked along the cliffs and picked up rocks, even though there was a sign that told me not to. When I was in England, I visited two sets of chalk cliffs, some in the south, some in Yorkshire. I walked along the cliffs. I walked along the giant boulders. I slipped on the kelp-covered boulders and ended up flying back home with a broken tailbone. When I was in France on tour, it was December, and it was a beautiful day. It was snowing for the first time in Paris for years, and my publisher said, "It is December. It's near Christmas. It's your anniversary, and Paris is the city of love. Take your husband and do something wonderful." And so I turned to my husband and said, "Husband, rent a car. We're driving to Normandy." And we did. We drove 4 hours outside of Paris to the cliffs of Normandy, and we spent the day, which was lovely, by the way, looking off over the cliffs and imagining horses galloping at the bases of them. So I really hope that readers, when they're reading about Thisbe, feel like they've actually been there, because I certainly feel like I've been there. After writing the Shiver trilogy, I figured that readers would probably be expecting me to turn out another romance. After all, in Shiver, Linger, and Forever, there are kisses approximately every 3 to 4 pages. But that's not quite how the love story in the Scorpio Races turned out. Really, it couldn't end up that way because of my main characters. It couldn't end up that way because of the setting. The setting itself, the island of Thisbe, is a hard, impossible, cold rock where it's very difficult to eke out a living, and the people there tend to be a few words and, well, quite honestly, quite repressed. And so in the end, I ended up with this love story that was more like Mr. Darcy. So it was dancing around the point, and quite regularly, I would send emails to my critique partners saying, "Why haven't they kissed yet? There's no kissing. I'm writing a love story with no kissing." But in the end, I'm quite happy with it. I think that the love story is stronger for the fact that it takes so long boiling underneath the surface before it shows up in, admittedly, quite fewer kisses than the Shiver trilogy. As an author, I have to admit I'm in love with the printed word. However, as an author, I have to admit one of the saddest parts is having read your book so many times that you've lost really the emotional impact of your own words. If I open up a copy of one of my novels a year after it's been published, I don't remember that same thrill of when I was writing it. But I have to say that audiobooks have been pretty incredible for restoring that emotional punch. Having someone else, especially someone who sounds just like what you imagined for the characters, reading your words back to you, all of a sudden, it's like I'm hearing my books like when I was first writing them. It's very much like it's a completely different story. It's happening in my head again instead of staring at the words that I've stared at so long. I was pretty amazed when I was listening to samples of Shiver, Linger, and Forever to find myself laughing at my own jokes, because once again, they were funny to me because they were being told by someone else. It's pretty magical. As a teen, I was equal parts writer, musician, and artist, and I used to have these massive existential crises where I tried to decide which one I was going to give up so that I could pursue my career in the other. One of the things that has been most rewarding about my career as an author is that I'm beginning to work back in with my art and my music. And one of the things that I really love about the audiobooks is that they also work in the music. I play many traditional Celtic instruments, and so The Scorpio Races is the first book that I've been able to write music for where I've gotten to pull those out. I got to pull out the harp and the baron and the tin whistle. It was fantastic to return to these kind of my roots, the music that I used to play and listen to all the time as a teen. I can't wait to do it again. When I'm writing, I always imagine a scene in a very visual way. In my head, it's a movie playing out. It's actually the same way I do my art as well. When I'm creating a piece of art, I'm imagining what the finished piece looks like before I start it. Likewise, when I'm composing a piece of music, I'm thinking about a scene in my head. And so it's easy to write music for my books because the scene has already been written. I just need to replay it in my head. When I was writing the piece for the Scorpio races, I really wanted to get that sense of driving action and movement. I wanted to let the listener hear the horse galloping on the beach. And so when you're listening to that track and hearing the percussion in the background, I want you to imagine me and my sister in a small studio stomping our feet and clapping our hands for quite a long time, and then taking sticks and mallets and beating them on all kinds of things that shouldn't have sticks and mallets beaten on them, because that is what makes the sound driving behind the Scorpio races. So I play quite a few musical instruments. I play 6, as a matter of fact. My family is a bit like the Von Trapp family. We all play a different musical instrument and could perform together very well. And many people ask me about my instruments, but really what they're asking me is about the instrument I am most famous for playing, which is, of course, the Scottish bagpipes. I am a little ashamed to say that I played them competitively as a teen in college. I actually had a very humbling moment last year when I was in Germany, when I discovered that the German word for bagpipe is, in fact, Dudelsack. It is impossible to have any level of pride whatsoever after you have told a room full of German school children that you are, in fact, a Dudelsacker.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.